Hey, good morning to you. Welcome. It's Dr. Morgan in Jacksonville here at KBJS FM 90.3. If I could only do the program outside, I would do it. But over the screens, I can kind of see the through the windows in the front of the radio station, I can see a rapidly growing restaurant right across the street called Chick-fil-A. Just think, it may be just, what, 2 months from now, maybe less? At the rate they're going, I'll be able to count 4 million cars coming through the drive-thru every Saturday morning when I do the program. Anyway, enough of that stuff. Somebody wants to call in. The number's 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. I'm Dr. Morgan.
Dr. Morgan, a few weeks ago, you said something kind of negative about flaxseed, and you did not elaborate on it. What is the deal about flaxseed?
I have a book called Estrogenation, and in the book there's a chart, and it's showing you which foods contain absolutely the highest concentration of estrogen. And so if I just give you a little bit of framework, estrogen is a hormone that if you get too much of it, your body's going to grow larger than what it should. And so if you have a 17-year-old boy that's like 6'4" and he has a very large chest, similar to that of a woman, that's called gynecomastia. That means the kid's got way too much estrogen from the food that he's eating. And there's a lot of factors. I know it's complicated, but I'm just trying to oversimplify it. But in this chart in the book, Estrogenation, they go through all the different foods that may be significant sources of estrogen. So they cover black beans, that just has a smidgen. Soy has a whole lot in it. But there's nothing that has the amount of estrogen that flax seeds do. Nothing. It's off the chart. And so as much as I want to believe that flaxseed is one of the greatest health foods of all time, and I think it's a great source of fiber, for someone that, you know, might be a girl or even a guy, your body just may not be able to handle that boatload of estrogen coming down the pike.
Okay. Well, I have a jar full of all kinds of seeds, chia seeds, poppy seeds, all kinds of seeds, and it has flax seeds in it. Now, I'm 67, and I do not take any kind of artificial estrogen supplements or anything.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if I'm getting too much estrogen.
Do you know one thing that a woman can look at? If you look at yourself in the mirror, let's just say you come out of the shower and you're examining your body, which is probably a good idea. If you see a bunch of these little bitty red spots all over your skin, sometimes those are called cherry hemangiomas, that can be a sign of too much estrogen.
I don't notice any of those.
Well, that's good. See, you probably have a very strong constitution, but
I have real nice skin, but I'm almost bald-headed, so I don't know.
Well, if that's the case, the first thing that pops in my mind is you probably have some level of autoimmunity. That just means your immune system is starting to attack you. So if somebody attacks the cells that produce pigment, that's an autoimmune condition called vitiligo. Mm. If somebody attacks the skin in a different manner, that might be called eczema or psoriasis. But there's definitely an autoimmune component when it comes to hair loss. It's just the immune system is, for a variety of reasons, is attacking your hair follicles.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sort of make sense?
Yes, but I'm wondering what I could do to remedy that.
Oh, good question. I like that. Well, number one, you have to identify what you're reacting to. So I can tell you what number one is on the list. It's wheat.
Well, I don't do grains.
Okay. Then if it's not autoimmune, then the next category I could switch to is it's probable that your stomach is not producing enough hydrochloric acid.
Possible.
And so if that's on the list, then we need to work to correct that. Probably number three on my list would be an underperforming thyroid. And I think these are all like legitimate possibilities. It's just a matter of figuring out what is the weak link here and how do we go about correcting it.
Yeah, I do take standard process Cataplex F. Is that their version of iodine?
Just a very, very teeny tiny small dose of iodine.
Okay, well, I take that every day of the world.
Okay, if we were to go to the location on our planet where probably people live longer and healthier than anywhere else on the Earth, it'd be Okinawa, Japan. Mm-hmm. At least it was 20 years ago, and that's probably the research I'm thinking of in my mind right now. So if I'm 20 years behind the time, until I have a new study in front of me, I have to go with that. But they average about 12 milligrams of iodine intake every single day between the sea vegetables they eat and the seafood they eat and maybe other things on the island, you know, of Okinawa. They're getting a whole bunch of iodine. Now, it just so happens they live longer than anybody else, like I just said. They have the lowest occurrence of breast cancer among women and probably the lowest occurrence of prostate cancer among men. Iodine is extremely valuable, and so when you give the thyroid, which the thyroid technically is the largest gland in your body that produces hormones, it's actually bigger than your ovaries are, it's bigger than your adrenals, bigger than your pituitary, your hypothalamus, you know, pineal gland. So when you give your body iodine, it's just a very simple concept. Is there an optimal amount? Is there too little? Could I be deficient? And so anytime that you give iodine, it does create the stage that makes it easier for your thyroid to work properly. So the Cataplex F may not be enough iodine to get the job done if your body's starving for it.
Well, I take standard process of vitamins because they're made from whole foods. So what else in the standard process would help?
Well, they have a product called Iodine Plus.
Okay.
And that's going to probably get you a little bit closer to where you want to be.
Okay.
You know what one of the big problems that we face is, and I think I'm living in reality when I say this, we're living in a world where you've got 50 zillion plastic compounds that are in the environment. You've got 50,000 different chemicals that are all man-made, whether they're solvents or they're used as lubrications for jet engines, and when a jet flies over, it spews these chemicals on the earth. I mean, it's just from every angle. And so we have to contend with toxic overload every single day of our lives, and a lot of these chemicals, they are so disruptive to the body, it's just unbelievable. So I think we're going to have a lot of new challenges, not just the coronavirus, but we're going to have so many challenges to keep our body in great working order.
Yeah, well, I work in a beauty shop, so I, you know, breathe toxins pretty often.
Are you talking about the ones that are coming off the women that walk in the door, or are you talking about the chemicals used on the hair?
The one that used on the hair.
I know.
Even though I have a very expensive air purifier in the beauty shop, you know, I'm spraying hairspray and breathing perms.
Well, that counts for something. I don't want to, like, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Can I tell you one thing that I like very much?
Sure.
Okay, recently I was looking at an article about the toxic metal called mercury, and that may not be relevant exactly to what your deal is, but just hear me out. Mercury is a very, very bad toxic element.
That and aluminum.
Exactly. But in the study, the question was asked, okay, we've got all these people that are poisoned with mercury. Now, what do we do about it?
Yeah, especially these babies with all these vaccinations.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So you look at...
He started on that.
Yeah, silver amalgam fillings from dentistry, mm-hmm. and then the mercury that's added to vaccines to stabilize the virus. Yeah, you're right about that. Perfect. I'm glad you brought that up. But... Mm-hmm. The question is, what do you do about the mercury once it's in the body? And so what they tried was, they tried the gold standard of medical care, which is called EDTA chelation treatment. So it's just basically where you go to a clinic and they insert a IV needle and they start putting this chemical into your vein that binds and magnetically captures the mercury so it could be transported out of you, or it could be bound up. I think the word chelation comes from the Koine Greek, and that means the word chela, which kind of means the claw, like you think of like a eagle's talon grabbing a rabbit, or grabbing a young deer or something flying off with it, or a fish. It doesn't let go. It's got a firm grip. So that's where we get the word chelation from, something that grabs or holds on to. And then what they did was they compared the gold standard against one simple technique that's probably been around forever. It's called infrared sauna. And when I say it's been around forever, if you spent all day outside in the sun, chances are a girl is going to start to perspire and sweat. See, personally, this would make me very, very nervous if a woman tells me that she never sweats or never perspires. And so when they took individuals with mercury poisoning and they put them in an infrared sauna, you want to know what the numbers were?
Tell me.
300 times greater excretion of mercury than with chelation therapy. You know what that means? Why would you even go and spend $200 a treatment on chelation therapy when you can get an infrared sauna? Why? Doesn't even make sense. It's 300 times greater. So when you submit your body to the infrared spectrum of heat that or light that comes off the those black carbon, whatever they're called, they just emit infrared from the in the sauna. I'm telling you, all the toxins are going to start pouring out of you. I've seen quite a few people completely transformed by the use or with the use of an infrared sauna.
Okay, so if I don't have an infrared sauna, what would be the next best thing? Just go out in the sun and sweat?
Why are you asking me that? I'm telling you, infrared sauna, baby. Okay, this is your body. You decide what you're going to do. How much time do you spend outside in the sunshine currently?
Oh, a little bit. I pick up pecans.
Okay. How much do you sweat every day?
Well, probably not enough, because I'm...
Well, how much do you sweat, though? Do you sweat at all?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Goodness, yeah. I'm pretty hot-natured. I sweat. To me, I sweat all the time because I don't like to sweat. But
well, here's what I want you to do. Just go to the Internet, Google infrared sauna, see what you come up with.
Okay, but I don't have any kind of modern conveniences like that.
Well, you're talking on a phone.
Well,
right
I have
now.
A telephone, but it's a landline. I don't have any smartphone, computer, Internet service.
Okay, I got it.
I'm just old-fashioned.
Well, what I want you to do...
I live in the dark age.
Okay, well, what I want you to do is move to Australia and go live with the Aborigines, and they can probably put you in a sweat lodge, and you can do it that way.
I'm not going anywhere to be away from my grandson.
Okay, then. all right.
Can I just go outside and sweat and be in the sunlight?
Well, that's what you're doing already, and it's not working.
Infrared sauna.
Okay, I can tell you. Let me just switch gears, since evidently what I'm saying is not really ringing the bell for you. All right, cilantro. Fresh cilantro every day.
Oh,
that
yeah.
greatly helps.
Oh, yeah. Yum, yum, yum.
Okay, then good. We're in business. So you can do that. And the next thing is, I'm almost positive there will be some food that you're eating on some level that just doesn't agree with you. I just don't know what that is.
Yeah.
It can be figured out, though.
Yeah.
And then I would say that maybe your stomach is not absorbing and assimilating nutrients as well as it should.
That could be it, because I do have a compromised stomach and, I guess you could say, colon. I had 6 inches of my large intestines removed.
Okay. I think we're building a very good case that you may have a little bit of malabsorption, right?
Okay.
How's your stomach compromised?
The sleeve.
Okay. With the sleeve, what you're going to have is you're going to have very, very severe nutrient absorption. I'm not saying that to attack you or to be negative. It's just the way it is, and so you're gonna really, really malabsorb things like iron and zinc. And so, let me say it a whole different way. There's a very simple lab test called ferritin. If I were to try to spell it, I would probably say F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, ferritin. Okay. Ferritin it's a very accurate lab test, simple to do. I think it's dirt cheap. But it tells you what iron you're holding in reserve. It's just like in your car, you get down where the red light comes on, and you go, oh, I'm running on my reserve. I've got like half a gallon left or 20 miles or whatever it is. But your ferritin, anytime that number falls below 40, there's not much you can do to stop hair from falling out.
Okay. Do I make a request from my PCP or my nutritionist?
Whoever can order the lab test is fine.
Okay.
I think the end prize is if you get the lab test and you measure your ferritin.
Yeah.
I mean, the simple things they can do right now to figure this out is, number one, they can do a standard blood chemistry profile. So, sometimes it's called a CMP, a complete metabolic panel. Mm-hmm. And in that, they're going to measure chloride and sodium. Those are elements that your body requires in order to make digestive juices or stomach acid.
Okay.
You can't live without salt. So you could look at that. The next thing that you could look at is an enzyme called alkaline phosphatase. If that's below 60, most likely you have an insufficiency of zinc. Okay?
Okay.
Zinc plays a role in causing hair to grow.
Well, I take zinc every day. Okay, well, those are some very, very good helpful hints. And that's the C.
Well, I'm sure your PCP and nutritionist has already got this figured out, right?
Well, they just do your basic standard, you know, testing cholesterol and creatinine and stuff like that. You have to...
Well, where does the nutrition part come in then?
Well,
let me ask you this. What are your cholesterol levels?
About 297.
Okay, so that tells me there is some current crisis in your body that needs to be mended or healed or repaired. And so that's what total cholesterol is. It's one of the greatest repair molecules of the body. And so if it's elevated, I'm starting to think, what do we need to heal or repair?
So you said I would ask for a CMT test?
CMP, like...
OP, yeah.
Like Connie, Mary, Paul, something like that.
CMP.
Yeah. And that's easy. That and then request a CBC, complete blood count, or cell blood count.
Okay.
And then a ferritin.
Okay.
That should move you toward a great direction. If you take it to your PCP, ask them to get out their magnifying glass and their fine-tooth comb and go through each one of those. And so if you have some numbers that come back too low or too high, that's a pretty good clue that something's out of balance in your body. And so what we have to do, we have to come to reality here. You know what the word reality is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You can have a test that comes back with a whole bunch of highs and a whole bunch of lows, and then you tell me that everything's hunky-dory with your body, because I'm going to very quickly overlook that, and I'm going to focus on reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, what does this mean?
Okay.
And so there's got to be a lot of clues just in that right there. I think that's going to be a home run for you.
Well, you've just been a wealth of information today.
Well, I hope I've helped you a whole bunch.
I'll get right on it. We missed you last week, but I listened.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Hope you had a good trip or whatever you did, if you went somewhere. And I appreciate your show, and Lord bless you richly.
Oh, thank you so much. May the Lord bless you also. Have a good day, ma'am.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, I just got a text from a patient, and the question is, can you speak on how to repair the hippocampus? Okay. In my mind, I'm seeing an image of the hippocampus. That's a brain structure. Or that's a region of geography in your brain. Now, let me say it this way, because I want everybody to, let's all be on the same page here. The hippocampus is one of the most unique tissues within your brain. And you've got to have the hippocampus working in order to process short-term memory or short-term recall. So let me just give you a for instance here, or an example. If you have a mother or a father that's exactly 70 years of age, and you're the child, or you're the sister or the brother, or the husband or the wife, and you really are very concerned about your... Let's just say your sister, and your sister is exhibiting very significant memory loss, and they become confused at certain times when they're under stress, and you go, wait a second, this used to never be this way. Why can't they remember? Why can't they process this information? Well, what they used to do back in the 1970s, if you took your mother that you think is having memory loss to a neurologist or a neurosurgeon, what they used to do back in 1970 was they'd say, okay, I want your mother to stand up. And so she would stand up. And then the neurologist would say, could you please stand on one leg as long as possible? And so let's just say that the woman can stand on one leg for exactly 30 seconds without wavering. She can maintain her balance. She's not struggling to stand up straight. She's not going to fall. And so they would say, hey, that's average right there. But the way that a neurologist would test the strength of the hippocampus or the brain is he would say, what I want you to do is stand on one leg. I don't care if it's with a shoe or barefoot. I kind of prefer barefoot, but, you know, in the world, you know, you got to find a simple way to do this. And so if a person could stand on one leg, or one foot, rather, with their eyes closed for 30 seconds, and they could maintain very good balance with their eyes closed, that usually, folks, means there's very, very good brain function, meaning the brain's firing on all eight cylinders. But I know you know where I'm going with this. If you try to stand up on one leg, or one stand on one foot, raise the other leg kind of like a flamingo, and what you would do is try to maintain your balance for 30 seconds with your eyes closed. If you can't do it, I'm telling you right now, there's something going on with the brain that's not great. And the hippocampus is one of those structures that I think of. And so let me get you up to modern times. So I just told you how neurologists in 1970, to measure brain function, they would have a person stand with their eyes closed on one foot for 30 seconds. If they could maintain their balance, they said, excellent. They got nothing wrong with their brain. But if they began to falter and, you know, hold it for 1 second and fall over, well, then we got some serious brain. And you could do that to yourself right now. Now, up to modern times, there's not many, many tests that really accurately predict if someone's going to be prone to dementia. And the reason why I'm going to dementia is because the hippocampus, that's like ground zero, or the main central processing center for short-term memory and for recall. And so I don't expect you to know everything about this, but what they would do is they would say, okay, how are we going to measure the hippocampus? And so one of the ways that they do it modernly is just using what's called an MRI, magnetic resonance imaging. And so if they do an MRI of someone's brain, one of the main structures that a radiologist would look at, or the neurologist would want the radiologist to look at, is the hippocampus. And so if your mama is 70 years of age, and they do an MRI on her brain, and you're complaining that she's got memory loss, or she can't process information, or she doesn't think the way that she used to think, meaning there's a fault or a problem there somewhere. If they come back and say, okay, we have the results of the MRI, her hippocampus is exactly 17% smaller compared to other women that are plus or minus 2 or 3 years of age. I mean, 2 or 3 years of her 70 years of age. You know what I meant. And so that's a pretty accurate diagnosis today. If they see that the hippocampus has shrunk by about 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 25%, they're going to say, there you go, bam, they've got dementia or Alzheimer's. That's in addition to the plaque formation in the brain and all the other tau proteins and ApoA and B, all that good stuff. And so with the hippocampus, you've got to have this online. Now, I just mentioned that if the hippocampus shrinks, that is not good. But here's kind of the direction I'm going to right here. And this is a hard conversation. I have this conversation with myself, but I'm going to try to have it with you right now. There is a chemical produced by the adrenal cortex. It is known as cortisol. If you were to go to a psychiatrist or a counselor, or somebody that would help you deal with PTSD, they would say, okay, this is called the chemical of fear. It is known as cortisol. You are pumping out too much of it. Now, you don't know this, but I'm fixing to tell you. I was reading an article that one of the greatest things that a person has to contend with when they have a health problem is fear. And you know what? I listen to people all day long, and I tend to believe every word that comes out of their mouth. You know that? Why would they lie to me? They're just telling me what their factual basis for being here is. And so people tell me all the time that their doctors have horrible bedside manners, and they do a good job of instilling a great amount of fear as opposed to uplifting them, encouraging them, or giving them hope. And maybe what I'm thinking of is cancer. And you don't know this, but I'm fixing to tell you, but the likelihood of you dying from a heart attack or committing suicide is really high after someone has a cancer diagnosis. Okay? When you have too much cortisol being secreted by your adrenal cortex, it does a number on the hippocampus of your brain. It shrinks it. It causes your amygdala to become enlarged, but your hippocampus always shrinks. What does that translate into? Continual anxiety. You have this feeling inside that things aren't going to go well. Anyway, one of the ways that you help the hippocampus function better is by feeding and nourishing the brain. Obviously, if you eat a boatload of sugar, you've got to stop it. There's not much that generates inflammation in your brain like boatloads of sugar does. It's just the way it is. So if your normal diet is donuts and Cokes and Doritos and pastries and candy and sugar, there's just no way to get well. It can't be done. But if you start putting living food, well, the one sugar that I think is probably the safest and the best is probably raw honey. That's kind of like a complete topic all the way around. But anytime that the hippocampus is a problem, we need to come up with a strategy to help it to heal and function better. And one of the ways of doing that is you've got to optimize your nutrient intake. It is just the way it is. We are living in a fallen world. Every one of us is going to be exposed to just exponential amounts of stress. I kind of know this because I talk to people all day long, and I have my own life to live. But stress is through the roof right now. I hear people tell me stories about how terrified they are of the future and what's going to happen to our nation. I won't get into that topic. But you've got to come to terms with that fear is what's destroying you and killing you. Fear has a way of paralyzing you, even if there's something good in front of you that gives you joy and pleasure. If you allow yourself, you will start to give in to fear, and you'll say, this can't possibly be true. No one can love me. I'm going to be abandoned. This is not going to work out. So, at the end of the day, we have got to find a way to lower cortisol levels. Let me just give you a few ideas. Cortisol, as a general rule, tends to increase in the human body when there's a deficiency of magnesium. I know what I'm telling you is just super, super simple right here, but your body requires magnesium. If you look at the United States Department of Agricultural Studies on magnesium in the soil, you're going to be really disappointed. You're going to say, well, where the heck am I going to be getting my magnesium from if the soil's all deficient? Well, most likely, you're going to have to be like the rest of us. You're going to have to supplement with magnesium. I don't know. Is it okay if I tell you that I take magnesium every day? Yeah, I think that's fine. I think, if anything, I'm just telling you from my perspective, you are going to do better when you take supplemental magnesium. If you get magnesium that's made from whole foods, probably the best. Okay? When you're low in vitamin C, cortisol tends to run to the excess. That is, in Spanish, no bueno. That is muy, muy no bueno. Okay, that wasn't right. All right, so to heal the hippocampus, you got to start eating whole foods that God himself has made. If you start falling in love with salmon and flounder and curry, and you start using spices, I'm kind of experimenting on my own body. But I'm thinking, if I can flood my body with spices and herbs, maybe I can see how long I can hold out and keep working. I've only done this for 31 years. Why not shoot for, 20 more maybe? We'll find out. So when you start looking at spices and herbs, things like ginkgo and turmeric and rosemary, green tea is a gold mine of information to the body. Have you ever heard of garlic before? I always find it so fascinating that when Solomon constructed the temple of the Lord, paid the craftsmen and the goldsmith, well, what they made was 200 images of golden pomegranates that was held by golden chains and hung in the temple of the Lord. No, I don't know what that looked like. I know this. When I was a boy growing up in Roy City, my mother's relatives, Aunt Lola and Aunt Bernie, they had a large pomegranate tree in their yard, and it was just right for climbing. And when you're young, that's a whole bunch of fun. When the adults are visiting for hours on ends and they can't ever wrap it up, you're going to have to entertain yourself. But the pomegranates were phenomenal. Did you know that in the Old Testament of the Bible, they talk about the robes that the high priest would wear as he would enter the tabernacle or the Holy of Holies? Well, guess what was embroidered into the robes of the high priest? Yeah, that's right, pomegranates. Have you ever heard of a masticating juicer? You could juice pomegranates. Or better yet, you could eat them. What if you're the type of person that says, I am going to refuse to let my kids eat junk food all day long, but I'm going to train them to eat real fruit if they want a treat? I think I've told you this before, but there was two different desserts that I was offered growing up, and it was just rare that I ever had a cookie. I just didn't get that. But one of the desserts that I was offered... I think my mom would say, hey, would y'all like a dessert? It's probably more like, is there anything else left to eat after we had the meal? She would take leaves of lettuce and tear them off and lay them on a plate or a saucer. And then she would cut a pear in half, and she would core it. And she would lay the pear on the lettuce and then take, I know this sounds weird, but this is my childhood. She'd take a scoop of mayonnaise and then grate cheese on the top of the pear. That was our dessert growing up. Now, if you're older, you might be able to relate to that because, you know, mothers were probably very concerned about the nutrition of their kids. You know, it's the only way that you're going to have great, radiant health, right? Okay. I don't know if I covered every topic on the hypothalamus. I can only just kind of take a stab at it, give you a starting point, but that's very, very serious. I meant to say the hippocampus. I said hypothalamus. They're just right there neck and neck, kind of connected to the hip anyway. So in order for you to process information and process emotions and have short-term memory, you got to have a hippocampus that's working right. If you're losing your memory, your hippocampus is not working right. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I have two questions for you, Dr. Morgan.
Yes, ma'am.
My first question is, I have fatty liver, and I think it's starting to scar up, and I need to do something about that. And the second is, my cousin is looking at MS versus Lou Gehrig's, and I was wondering what we could do for her.
Well, let's cover hers first, okay?
Okay.
When I drove to Jacksonville this morning from Tyler, I just happened to click on new research on MS. Is that okay if I cover that?
Sure.
See, what are the chances of me listening to a lecture on MS coming to Jacksonville? That's like one in a million, isn't it?
It is.
I thought to myself this morning, should I study hemorrhoids, pimples on the nose, or should I study MS? And I chose MS. I'm really joking about the other stuff. I didn't think about those things at all. But in this study, they were comparing drugs that are commonly used for MS versus vitamin D3. And they said, oh, my word, vitamin D3 outperforms all the drugs that are used by people that have MS. Now, are you going to believe me telling you that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so here's what we want to think of. Now, I know that I'm going to come across as kind of a radical, crazy person here, but I want you just to at least consider this. they used, and I'm not telling her to do this, but I'm telling you, like anything else, there is always a Goldilocks just right dose of nutrients for a person, and there's a lot of factors. But let me just say it this way. If you have MS and you've got this continual, ongoing, chronic, inflammatory, neural degenerative condition that's spiraling out of control, we got to ask the question, what are we going to do to stop it? And so here goes. If I tell you that sugar and wheat have been shown to interfere with the synthesis of vitamin D, you just have to choose to believe that or not. And so what I'm saying is, don't eat sugar and don't eat wheat. If you need something sweet, why don't we go with some raw honey? Why don't we go with fruit? Life is like a bowl of cherries. Let's just eat them up.
There you go.
Okay. So vitamin D3, they used anywhere between 10,000 to 40,000 units a day without any side effects. I know that everyone listening is an expert on this, and they're going to say, Dr. Morgan, you can't say that. You're going to cause people to be poisoned. Well, in this study, they gave these women with MS somewhere between 10 to 40,000 IUs of vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol, and this greatly outperformed all the pharmaceutical drugs. All of them. There's no drug that could compete with this. Now, let me ask you a question. Why would you take a toxic drug that has horrible side effects and causes, you know, a home mortgage payment every month just to pay for it versus something that you could get for like $20 a month with no side effects?
That's true.
So if your friend wants to type in or Google research on multiple sclerosis and vitamin D3, she is going to be floored. And she's going to turn to you and say, you are the best friend that I've ever had in my life. You're a genius. Because you're going to be the one that tells her that information, so I'm proud of you. Now, let's talk about, is that good enough for MS?
That's good enough.
I mean, in the real world, I would just have her eat meat and vegetables. Oh, how I love the idea of her eating fatty fish. Is there any chance that she could start dating an Eskimo that could provide her fresh whale blubber and salmon?
I think her husband may have a small problem with that.
Oh, I knew you were going to come up with something to keep us from doing that. In the meantime, he can go catch some salmon for her, right?
he would. I do know that. He would do whatever he has to.
Okay, well, that's what you're looking at, meat and vegetables, preferably organic and clean. And so there you have it right there. I'd cut out all grains and dairy products and corn if it were me, any chemicals or food. And you know what's going to happen? She's going to heal.
I have a question now.
Yeah.
I know you said corn. So is it all corn, or can you eat, like, non-GMO corn?
Yeah, and you know what? Popcorn is non-GMO corn. I think the chemical that they spray on just about every crop known to man called Roundup is just about the most toxic substance on earth. And so if you get organic and non-GMO corn, you're trying to get the lowest dose of Roundup possible. I mean, we don't live in a perfect world anymore where it's free of chemicals.
Right.
And so, yeah, you just do the very best you can. But part of this has to be, I need her to become very, very curious. I need her to become a little bitty research girl. She needs to start researching. What am I going to do to restore my health? Well, number one, she's going to start spending her days outside in the natural light and the fresh air. If she wants to heal. And don't tell me she can't tolerate heat or cold. No, that's what they all say. No, I'm joking. And so she's going to have to heal her body. And so some of this is going to have to be detoxification. So if she wants to plant kale on the ground today, and then 8 weeks from now she starts juicing it every day, then good, do it. It's going to have such a vital life force of energy and nutrition. Plus, If nobody else picks up on anything else I've said today, then I've got to convince you, chlorophyll is one of the greatest healing agents that the human being needs in order to be strong and healthy, and you get that from green stuff. So if you run kale through a juicer, guess what's going to come out? Green juice and chlorophyll.
Okay. I did a little bit of research.
Good.
And I already bought mega doses of vitamin D3 vitamin K.
Yeah.
Her, because I know that she has the plaque, she has some plaques in her brain, okay? And I know that she's getting extremely forgetful at times, and her right leg, it's like something in there doesn't quite work, and she tends to trip and stuff when she's going, like, in doorways and stuff. It's not drop foot, but it's something similar. Does that make sense?
It just means the nervous system and the musculoskeletal system are not working right.
Right. So,
well, here's a way through this. She's gonna, every day is a day of training.
Right.
And so when she gets up today, she needs to go and do her yoga and then do her stretching and then do her balancing exercises. Because at the end of the day, there's only two things that have been shown to grow brand new brain cells or nerve cells. It's called exercise and novel learning. That means you gotta learn something new every day. Yeah, there you go. I hate to break it to you. She needs to be walking around barefoot all day long. I mean, even if I told you what the research shows, people that walk barefoot and they practice grounding or earthing, however you want to say it, they have twice as many nerves in their legs and twice as many arteries. You know what? I tell people this all the time, and some people look at me like, I cannot do that. I do not like to put my foot on the dirt. I'm going, well, you're not getting over your neuropathy then.
Okay.
That sounded kind of harsh, didn't it?
No, you're good. Now, you said balancing. So does she need to get, like, one of those little mini trampoline things?
I think we could just start off holding on one foot. If she can keep her eyes closed and balance on her right foot without opening her eyes for 2 minutes, she's awesome. But here's how it's going to go. She's not going to be able to do that. She's going to say, great, I tried 4 times in a row. I got 2 seconds one time before I had to touch the ground, before I fell. I had 3 seconds, and I had 5. Well, if she'll just stick with it, by the next day, she'll probably say, oh, my goodness, I did it for 8 seconds without falling. Well, what does that mean? That means the body is designed to adapt rapidly to good input. So she can get one. They sell those balance boards at, like, Walmart for $20. They're fabulous. They look like a curved, rounded, bent surfboard. Sometimes when I get on mine, I think, man, I'm on a big wave right now. No, I don't. but she needs to, you know how fabulous YouTube is?
Yes.
When I first became a chiropractor, I did not have any of this stuff at all. There was really no internet that I could use and look up a website. Are you kidding me? She could, within 3 nanoseconds, have 5 videos in front of her to teach her. Now, if she were to get on a website called YouTube, I know you've never heard of that, or Amazon.com, but those are legitimate websites.
Yeah, I have.
I know, I'm just joking. But if she went on YouTube, she could type in NAT Move. That's NATMOV. This is a natural movement type of system. It's phenomenal.
Okay.
Totally. I mean, there's a ton of things that are phenomenal. If she wants to go to ballroom dancing, that's perfect. If she wants to go to yoga, I love that also. If she wants to go to Pilates, but she's going to have something. Unless you put stress on the body, mentally, emotionally, and physically, you cannot grow.
Okay.
So we just got to rethink everything. What are we going to do to help rejuvenate? Right now, here's what she's got. She's got what's called degeneration. That means everything's breaking down at a faster rate than what it's being able to be repaired. She's going downhill. What we want to do is regenerate. And you're going to regenerate by putting living whole foods in the body, avoiding junk food. But we got to find a starting point. But she can completely do away with all that leg garbage. All the feeling will come back. All the plaque will go away. I've seen it over and over and over and over again. But then again, Here's what I'm having a hard time with these days. People walk into my office so mentally weak, if you tell them they're going to have to start pushing to walk from their front door to the mailbox, they act like I'm trying to torture them or something. I'm going, listen, would you get with the program? You're going to have to start putting some stress on your body. Move your body. Command. See, if you had it told me that she used to be athletic, I'd say, great. She has to tell her body, you are going to walk to the mailbox, whether it's hard or not. You've got to do something to regenerate nerves and make them grow.
Right.
Anyway, am I going overboard on that topic?
No, you're doing fine, because she, I don't know if she was athletic necessarily, but she used to go riding horses when she was a kid and a teenager and things like that. And I know she's got a strong will because she had not one but two babies that were premature.
Oh, wow.
So, and we have, and I was just, because we have autoimmunity in our family, I'm psoriatic.
Yeah, exactly.
And her half-sister is systemic lupus, and we had a great aunt that had rheumatoid. So.
Oh, wow. So you kind of cover the whole gamut, huh?
We do. We have a fair amount.
You know what I would do in my fantasy world? I'd put on a horse every day and make her ride a horse.
But see, I might be able to do that because I think if they don't necessarily have a horse, but they know people that do have horses because they live out in the country.
Well, if she rode a horse every day, she would have rapid improvement. That's what the studies show on MS.
I don't know about every day, but she might be able to ride some on the weekend.
Well, I mean, if she kind of throws in with the... I think there's a gang over there called the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Right?
If she could join up with them, I think they hold up, like, you know, bakeries for apple dumplings, stuff like that.
Right.
And you know what? You got to stay on a horse when you're making a getaway, right?
You do. You do. And, you know, she is a good rider.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Sure.
It's a total waste of your time, but when I was younger, I really enjoyed riding horses. And so where I would go riding was down this country road off Farm to Market 19. That goes from Frankston and Natchez. And there was one little stretch that I had to keep my eyes really, really peeled because when I would ride down this road, there was a group of people that had a compound there. And I can't remember if they were called Holy Grounders. And they were there in Frankston for a long time, but when I would ride my horse, every so often I'd look up to the right and go, oh, there's somebody with a rifle over their shoulder watching me ride by. And you'd never heard the name Stephen Koresh, have you?
No, not at all.
Waco, Janet Reno, Burning of the Compound.
But,
but those were the people I used to ride on horseback right by, and there was this one bridge.
And
it was a wooden bridge, and I don't know if you know anything about horses, but sometimes they get just a little skittish when it comes to different sounds and stuff. But I remember the horse I would ride, I just had to, he would spook when I'd go over this wooden bridge. Anyway, enough of that. You want to talk about fatty liver?
Yes. Like I said, I think I'm starting to scar. And
all right, let's stop that. Stop your scarring right now. Okay, here goes. Stop eating all grains. Don't eat another grain if you want your liver to heal. You got to make it easy on it. All you're going to do if you eat rice and grain and pasta and noodles and wheat and corn is you're just going to make more fat deposits in your liver. That's just the way it is. Only eat two meals a day. Eat 6 hours apart. That's called intermittent fasting. Make it easy for your body to eat all that fat in the liver. If you skip breakfast every day, your body's going to say, oh, evidently, we're not going to get any food coming down the pike, so what are we going to do? Oh, I have a plan. Let's eat us. And so if you skip breakfast, your body will eat you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you drink coffee in the morning instead of eating breakfast, you're not going to win with this. Because coffee is going to cause a spike of insulin. Insulin is going to tell your body basically under no circumstances go to the liver and pull any fat out of it. So
okay,
if you're going to have coffee, have coffee with your two meals.
Okay.
Focus.
I really like coffee, so that's good.
Oh, well, I just kind of said that for other people that might be listening, but that's fine by me. Fall in love with dandelion root tea.
Okay, so if I do the dandelion, can I do that in the morning, or do I need to do it with my two meals?
I think you can safely do that in the morning, and the other substance that I'm completely given toward is lemons. If you take 2 to 3 fresh lemons a day and squeeze that in your cup of dandelion tea, I'm telling you, it's going to start helping dissolve all that fat that's in the liver over time, not in one day, but over time.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, how many millions of Americans have a fatty liver right now? I think it's like close to 80 million, something like that.
Okay, well, I called a couple weeks ago and talked to you, and I've already started the lemons.
Good.
And it's the fresh lemons, because you told me I can't do it the other way.
I use a substance called Hepertrophin PMG by standard process. It's a protomorphogen that comes from a calf liver. It's like a nuclear vitamin, but when you take that, it sends a signal for your body to start healing and repairing the liver. So that's one option that you have right there.
Okay, so, okay, because I was taking, there's a company called Ancient Grains, and I've been doing their liver, too. I started that. But you just named something completely different that I don't know about.
Well, but it's a substance that when you take it, it tells your body, please repair the liver now. And the amount of exercise it's probably going to take with the fatty liver is going to be probably a minimum of an hour and a half a day of something. So if you tell me you want to walk 30 minutes three times a day, I'd say perfect. If you want to walk 45 minutes twice, perfect. Let me tell you just a very quick story. A woman calls me on the phone, which I'm not really big on phone consultations, number one, just because I never get to examine the person and I can't really figure out everything. But this woman calls me and I like her. And she says, I can't lose weight. I feel horrible. What do I do? And I told her what to do. And she calls me back a month later and she said, I've had absolutely zero success. Nothing's working right. Your plan is a failure. And I'm going, well, great. All right. And I said, well, here's what I want you to do. You're going to have to exercise twice a day, and you're going to have to start the intermittent fasting, because when I questioned her, she kind of hemmed and hawed around, like, I just don't have time to exercise, you know.
Right.
I've got too much stuff to do. Anyway, so it's just the way it is. Everything is a choice and attitude, right?
Right.
So what she did is she says, okay, I will try what you're telling me. I will exercise morning and evening. She said, can I do walk away the pounds on a TV, on a DVD on my TV? I said, of course. I said, but you're going to have to do it twice a day, and you're going to have to just eat two meals, just meat and vegetables. She called me back in 1 month, and I said, hey, what's your results now? She said, well, I've only lost 22 pounds in 1 month. I'm going, okay, well, my point is, we finally hit the right metrics, and so one of the points that I want to get to is, you know how in the Bible it says the life is in the blood?
Right.
Do you believe that?
Yes.
Okay, I do too. But the problem is, with a fatty liver, a person just doesn't get enough blood flowing through the liver. So how are we going to remedy that? Well, it may take 2 45-minute exercise sessions just so we can get more motion and more velocity and more speed of blood flow through the liver. And so what I'm trying to convince everyone listening of is, the faster that blood flows through the body, the cleaner it is and the more it cleans the organs.
Okay.
Just think of like a mountain stream. You look at it and you go, oh, my word, that is the clearest, cleanest-looking water of all time. I'd drink some of that. But if I said, what about the beaver pond over here with all this black algae and duckweed on it? You'd say, I think I'll pass. That looks like death. And so you've got to get the blood moving through the liver to repair fatty liver. There's just no other way around it. So I say it's a minimum of an hour and a half of exercise a day.
Now
what?
But
what?
I can do the exercise. That's not the issue, but... you mentioned the standard process.
Hepertrophin PMG. Or hepatotrophin PMG, something like that. And all it is, it's just nutrients from liver extracts from a calf that when you swallow them, they help rejuvenate the liver, which is what you want.
Okay.
Just like we talked about, MS is degeneration and decay of the body. We want to regenerate and revitalize the body, right? Or rejuvenate.
Right.
And so that's one of the ways of doing that.
Okay.
And so there's a whole bunch of things that we got to do, but you got to start growing more mitochondria if you're going to turn the tide on this, and you could do that with 2 exercise sessions a day. I don't want you doing stuff like CrossFit. You're just going to get hurt.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the CrossFit, but I can probably do 45 minutes before work, and then I can probably do 15 minutes at lunch, and then do 30 minutes at night.
Wow. Man, that's an impressive plan. I like that.
So that's good. I just wanted to get that standard process so I can work on getting that, too.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope that helps you and pushes you in the right direction.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your time, sir.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's time for another phone call. We have exactly 5 minutes left in the show. Actually, 4.5, but that's time for a call. 903-586-5257. Okay, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yay, you made it.
Yes, I did. My husband has shingles, and he's wanting to know what we can do for that.
Okay, just very, very quickly, what I would recommend, I'm going to tell you some things that I can't recommend also, but I'm telling you because I love you, and I want him to get over it quickly. Could you tell me the exact location?
Under his right breast and then all the way to his back. The rash was right there, but it's kind of clearing up now.
Oh, that's good.
You know, underneath, all the way to his back, he has all kinds of pain, but it's all on that side, you know, right around that same area, but in his back and on the side.
If his doctor would give him a vitamin B12 injection, I would not refuse it.
Okay.
So I don't know if that can happen, but in the meantime, this is what I would do if it were me. Number one, I would use what's called thymus extract. The thymus is the largest gland of the immune system.
And
that's what helps defeat viral infections very, very quickly. So you can give what's called thymus extract.
Okay.
And that's pretty easy to come by. Now, if it were me, I would probably I'm not telling him what to do, but I'm just telling you what I would do. I would probably take about 40 to 50,000 units of vitamin D3 every day for about a week. And you got to understand something. This is caused by a virus. Viruses only replicate and grow inside of living human cells. They can't grow this stuff in a petri dish like they can a bacteria. So bacteria, they can use antibiotics like amoxicillin and things like that, or, you know, Cipro. They can't do that for a viral infection, which I'm thankful for that. So if he were to take a boatload of vitamin D3 and maybe K2, I think that would help to turn the tide.
Okay.
The other thing that I'm going to tell him not to do, because I can't really recommend this on the air, do not take his midstream urine and dab on the area of the lesion to make it disappear and go away very quickly. Do not do that.
Okay.
So do you understand? I'm telling you not to do that.
Right.
And so if he captures his midstream urine, do not dab it all over the area of pain to make it quickly go away. Do not do that.
Okay.
Are we on the same page?
I understand,
okay, good. I'm making sure that you do not use his own urine to make it quickly disappear and go away.
Okay.
I'll let you read all about that.
A lot of people will try a lot of things to make something happen.
Well, so, if you've had enough pain for enough, you know, long enough period of time, you're pretty motivated to try almost anything, aren't you?
Yes.
Sometimes putting raw honey on it and just buttering that area up can be very, very helpful. But what he wants is he wants it to dry out, crust over, clear up and go away and be resolved. Because we do not want him developing what's called post-herpetic neuralgia.
Right.
That's bad. But I think
that's
if we work
on pain lasts.
Oh, yeah, but just give him real food. Just continually reaffirm him, tell him how much you love him and care about him, and you're going to take good care of him. Keep serving him cups of dandelion tea with a juice of half a lemon and maybe a little spoonful of raw honey in there. And just, you know, keep bathing him with love, and he'll heal.
Okay. And I've tried to find out if it's contagious, because I've known couples that both got shingles at the same time. So,
let me say it this way, and I'm not trying to be offensive at all, but absolutely the number one predictor on shingles is going to be severe amounts of mental emotional stress.
Really?
Yeah. So what was really stressing your husband?
I guess the pandemic, but probably not the pandemic.
Well, maybe it is a pandemic. I mean, I think everybody's just pretty much reached their limit on that deal, haven't they?
Yeah, maybe it was the election. No, we won't go there.
Yeah, we could just keep filling in the blanks, and all of them are true. Well,
it can't be the family at all. So.
Oh, no. We know that family stress is just non-existent these days.
All right.
Well, I hope these things help. I think we just ran out of time, but I really appreciate your phone call, and you're such a good woman.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to KBJS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.